Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day.
Well, good morning. Welcome. It's Friday, October 19th. And we made it to the end of the week. Maybe that is just a big sigh of relief for you. Now, the good news is that even though we've come to the end of the week, we have not come to the end of God's mercies. They, in fact, are new every morning. Think about that. It's not day old, week old. It's not like, you know, going to the secondhand store. No, God's mercies are new and fresh today, as is God's steadfast love. That doesn't change as well either. Maybe you didn't have milk for breakfast this morning. You ran out of milk. You don't run out of God's mercies and His love. And it might be that this has been a week where you've kind of been remembering. As the writer of Lamentations says, I remember my affliction and my wandering. I remember my soul is downcast, and yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope because of the Lord's great love. We are not consumed, for His compassions never fail. They're new every morning. Great is Your faithfulness. And he goes on to say, I say to myself, the Lord is my portion, therefore I will wait for Him. Seems like a good way to start the day. Carmen LaBerge will join us in a minute. We'll talk about the news. We've got a great conversation coming up with the former chief, the former fire chief in Atlanta. Had a great settlement, a great conclusion to a lawsuit that the Alliance for Defending Freedom was involved in. We're going to hear about that in the second half of the hour. But Carmen LaBerge is coming up in a minute. First, though, let's think about God's mercies new today.
Great is Thy faithfulness, O God, my Father. There is no shadow of turning with Thee. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. As Thou hast been, Thou forever will be. Summer and winter and springtime and harvest, sun, moon and stars in their courses above. Join with all nature in manifold witness to Thy great faithfulness, mercy and love.
Eight past the hour on a Friday morning. Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. Regular contributor on Fridays, Carmen LaBerge, of course, who you hear each weekday over the noon hour here on Faith Radio with Connecting Faith. And I always love talking with Carmen about the news of the day, getting fresh perspective. Good morning, Carmen. Welcome.
Good morning, Neil. Thank you.
Hey, I know that you had your husband was out with some friends out doing a little elk hunting over, the last week or so.
Yes, the hunting was excellent. The gathering was not so good.
Yeah, right.
So they had a great hunt. They saw some elk. They saw lots of antelope. They saw moose. Hmm. They brought home no meat.
Okay.
So as a grocery trip, it was unsuccessful. As a hunting trip, I think they had a great time.
There's I was thinking about the elk, and there's a great video series put out by Steve Greason. Thing called maybe Master Works, and Steve is the wife of Annie Herring, husband of Annie Herring, but is a film producer. But just telling stories about how God's creation and looking at the elk, and that, you know, that the bull elk leading the herd and just bringing them to all the places where there's rich food and all those things is pretty fascinating. Just I also thought your husband might be interested in the latest of Christianity Today. Matthew Sleeth had an article about trees And I know he's an arborist, so I'm just passing on, you know, things that you can spend your weekend, you can watch.
It's good. Yeah, I appreciate looking out for me. Matthew Sleeth's piece on trees, for people who haven't read it, it's just excellent. I mean, God obviously talks a lot about trees in the Bible. I mean, even if you just think about the opening chapter of Genesis, and you went through with, you know, you just went through that one chapter and you highlighted all the places where trees are mentioned, you're going to become pretty aware pretty quickly that God has an affection for trees. I had a friend, I mean, she's still a friend. Her name's Patty. She now lives in Wyoming. But we were driving, and I just remember her, how awestruck she was in the moment, recognizing that, you know, God really only needed to create one tree or one kind of tree. And yet, when you look across, you know, particularly a forest, and you just see the massive variety of trees, and then if you were to travel to another part of the world, they're going to have completely different trees and yet just as diverse a variety of trees. And so, look, good time today to think about the tree of life. Good time to think about the tree upon which Jesus gave his life for us, and the tree that's talked about, you know, in Revelation. It's going to be, you know, planted on both sides of the river. So just in terms of being aware today, as the leaves may be changing color where you are or falling from the trees, always good opportunity to get God back into the conversation.
Well, and to celebrate and enjoy thinking about God's mercies new every morning. I mean, the abundance of his creative handiwork, we should always be in wonder of that day in and day out.
Amen.
Well, so we're talking about the article Christianity Today. Maybe we could talk about another report out of CT, and that has to do with what Christians believe. There was well, of course, there's always studies out and research, but let's talk about some of the latest findings.
Sure. So Ligonier is a ministry that has been engaged with Lifeway Research over a number of years, and they are doing they're doing this very comprehensive State of Theology in America research. And so this is research that's now been repeated in 2014, 2016, and then just released for the 2018 report. And so one of the things that they're looking at is, are things getting, you know, better or worse over time in terms of the answers to these questions? So lots of outlets, including Christianity Today, are reporting on this research that's, you know, technically Ligonier Ministries research, and you can find it at the State of Theology. Like, that's the website. Here's what we're finding, Neil. Things are not getting better, first of all. They're getting actually worse, even just in research that's done in a six-year span of time. The results are already worse in terms of what Americans know about what the Bible says, and then our spiritual practices related to it. And it's getting worse among those who self-identify as evangelical Christians, as well as it's just getting worse in the culture at large. So just take something as simple as the Ten Commandments. People don't think that they're all relevant. They think like maybe six of them are relevant. And among evangelical Christians, although there might be agreement that Jesus is part of the Trinity, there is then this amazing level of confusion. More than half of evangelical Christians answered that, well, Jesus is the first perfect created being. Okay, that both of those things can't be true. You can't believe that he's a part of the Godhead, a coexistent, co-eternal member of the triune Godhead, and believe that he's the first created being. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So unless they're saying first in terms of order, priority, which, again, you can read survey questions differently or understand them differently, but that would be a pretty nuanced way of understanding the word first in the question. So I think that it's a good conversation piece for people. It's a good opportunity to ask yourself, how often do I read the Bible outside of church? How often am I actively praying outside of church? And are some of my beliefs and ideas actually heretical based on historic Christian belief?
Because if we don't read the text, then, you know, we're subject to, yeah, we're subject to whatever anybody says or brings about. I mean, God bless all the pastors who are doing great work, but it doesn't mean that you know, they shouldn't be doing the work for us.
Well, that's exactly right. And we shouldn't just take other people at their word. We should take God at his word. But if we're not in the word, then we don't know what God is saying about something. And so even a question like, well, does the smallest of sins deserve eternal damnation? That's a pretty loaded question. Mm. People are going to have a hard time with the whole concept of damnation. They have a hard time with the concept of sin. And then there's a lot of confusion about whether or not, you know, sin is sin. It's anything that's contrary to the holiness or the perfection of God. Or is sin something sort of on a graded scale? Well, actually, 69% of Americans think that not only is sin on, you know, this graded scale from really small sins to really bad sins, but that really small sins, you know, those aren't actually worthy of condemnation. Well, that is us as Americans putting ourselves as an authority over God in terms of what holiness looks like. And if we're going to judge holiness based on some sort of comparison to other people, like, oh, well, the things that I do aren't nearly as bad as the things Neil does, then I'm missing the point, because the point of comparison is Jesus and perfection. I'm compared against a perfect standard of holiness. I'm not compared against Neil. I mean, you might be the perfect standard of holiness today, but right, in terms of eternal conversations, yeah. The standard of comparison is not some other person that's walking around today, or even some horrific person that lived in the past. I can't just compare myself to Hitler and say, well, I'm better than him. Well, God's not grading on a scale. God is grading on his own holiness. And anything that's contrary to his own holiness can't be in his presence. And that's really the conversation we need to be having with people.
The question always comes down, how good is good enough, right? And then we don't understand, we misunderstand grace then. Why do we need grace?
Yeah, absolutely. So how good is good enough? The answer to that question is God.
Yeah.
That's the good that's good enough.
16 past the hour. Carmen LaBurge is with us. You hear her each weekday over the lunch hour on Connecting Faith, and she joins us regularly on Friday mornings just to review some of the news, talking a little bit about what Christians believe. There is a large group of Christians that make up the Russian Orthodox Church, and they have cut some ties with Constantinople, and we'll find out a little bit about that and more in just a moment here on Faith Radio Morning. It's 19 past the hour, and starting out this Friday morning with a conversation with Carmen LaBurge, who you hear each weekday on Connecting Faith. But Carmen, I heard you talking yesterday on Connecting Faith a little bit about what's going on in terms of the Russian Orthodox Church and some of the schism there. This is going to be a pretty significant theological and cultural issue in the years to come, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I think there's so many Christians in the United States who simply don't know a whole lot about Eastern Orthodox Christianity. And that's because in 1054, there was a split between what we know as Eastern and Western Christianity. And so we sort of follow a trend line back through Roman Catholicism, which would be Western Christianity. So we think of, you know, the Great Schism in 1054, and then we fast forward to, you know, to 1517 at the beginning of the Protestant Reformation. Like, those would be in the Western Church the points in time that we would say, hey, these are really significant historical markers that we need to look at. Well, in Eastern Christianity, mark the date October 15th, 2018 as what years from now, centuries from now, will very likely be looked upon as a great schism. And here's why. The Russian Orthodox Church is actually not only the largest, but the most wealthy of all of the what are known as autocephalous. They are independent, and yet they are connected to one another, these autocephalous churches within Orthodox Christianity. And what happened on Monday was that the Russian Orthodox Church cut ties with what's known as the Patriarch of Constantinople, which is the, you know, it's sort of like if you think of a hierarchy, what has been sort of over the next layer of, it's not really governance, but the next layer of association above the Russian Orthodox Church has been this Ecumenical Patriarch of Constantinople. Well, they broke ties with them on Monday, and they're calling it a schism. But I think what's one of the really important things to recognize, Neil, is that this is not a schism that's theological. This is a schism that's absolutely 100% political. Hmm. So these autocephalous churches in Eastern Orthodox Christianity are national, they're national churches. And so what precipitated this action by the Russian Orthodox Church was that the Patriarch of Constantinople granted autocephalous status to the Orthodox Church of Ukraine. And so this is a political issue, really, between the Russians and the people of Ukraine, the church in Ukraine, because they want that Ukrainian church to continue to be under the authority of Russian Orthodoxy. And obviously that has not happened. So that's what's going on. It's really, it's very significant because we're talking about 300 million Christians who, are recognized as a part of the Eastern Orthodox Christian Church.
Be something to watch for. And of course, Vladimir Putin is involved in it, which I guess is not surprising. He's involved pretty much in anything.
Yeah. So, and actually, it's interesting, even just his name. So Vladimir Putin's namesake was Prince Vladimir, who happens to have been the first baptized monarch of the Russian people. And so you really got to go way back in time in terms of the conversations that they're having in Russia right now about the connection, the official connection between the church and the state. It was Vladimir of Kiev, which we call Kiev, Vladimir of Kiev, who officially made Rus, which we know as Russia, a Christian state. And that happened at his baptism in 988 AD. So we're talking about a Roman Empire that views itself as having been Christian since 988, actually some generations prior to that. It was his grandmother, Olga of Kiev, who was the first ruler of the what's called the Kievan Rus to convert to Christianity. And that was sometime in the mid-900s. And so we're talking about a very, very historic branch of the Christian faith. We're also talking about the absolutely this total intertwining of Russian history and its official Christian church. And there's probably people listening right now who are saying to themselves, now, wait a second. I thought that communism was atheistic. Well, yes, but you have to remember that communism was a very brief, relatively brief period of time, period of history in all of Russian history. Very, very brief period of time, totally encapsulated by the 20th century. And so when we talk about 10th century Christianity in Russia, and then when we talk about 21st century Christianity in Russia, now we're back to talking about a state church and really the way that the church is completely intertwined, in this case, with Vladimir Putin.
I don't think there's too many places where you go up and down the dial where you're talking Russian history from the 900s, you know, at 25 past, you know, 6 central time. So
yeah, or learning to say Kiev the right way.
Sure.
There you go.
You know, you provide us so much more information than we even knew we needed. And we appreciate it all. Carmen,
thanks, Neil.
It's good to visit with you. And tell me a little bit about today's program coming up on Connecting Faith.
So today, I've got two guests joining me today. We're going to lead off the hour actually talking about Jamel Khashoggi, but I'm going to then have a conversation with Peter Burns from the International Defense of Christians, called the IDF, and he's going to bring us a story from the Nineveh Plain where Christians are now returning to the parts of Syria and Iraq where they were driven away by ISIS. And we're going to talk about what that return looks like. And then I'm going to have Erwin Lutzer on, and we're going to talk about the church in Babylon, what it looks like today in American culture for Christians to be light in darkness. It should be a fun hour.
Wow, that looks great. We're looking forward to hearing Carmen LaBerge, noon Central Time, 1 Eastern Time, Connecting Faith, a regular part of Faith Radio. Carmen, great to visit with you this morning. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Neil. You too.
26 past the hour, and we'll lighten things up a little bit with Ken Davis coming up in a minute. He's going to talk bumper stickers and more. Stick around for that. The city of Atlanta accepted their mistakes and they're hoping to move on. This week, the city of Atlanta agreed to pay $1.2 million in a settlement. This is to the former fire chief of Atlanta, Kelvin Cochran, who was fired because the city didn't appreciate a book that he had written, a men's devotional book he'd written in his spare time. We're going to hear that story as we hear from Fire Chief Calvin Cochran and David Cortman from Alliance Defending Freedom. They're going to join us here in about 10 minutes with the amazing story and this great victory for religious freedom. That's coming up in 10 minutes here on Faith Radio Mornings. I know many are praying as they have heard the news, as officials in Barron County, Wisconsin, still inviting volunteers to come help search for missing 13-year-old Jamie Kloss. She's been missing since Monday morning when a 911 call led law enforcement out to her house, and they found her parents both been shot to death, and she's been missing since. Continue to pray for her and for those involved. Yesterday, we had a great conversation with Justin Holcomb, who's written several books on finding hope in the midst of domestic and sexual abuse. And he asked us, said, these are some questions that you need to ask if someone is maybe been involved or had experienced abuse.
How do you recognize abuse? Like, what is abuse and how do you recognize it? People need to be trained in that, especially church leaders, all different types of abuse. And how do you respond to it is another one. When there's an allegation of abuse, what does justice for both people, the alleged perpetrator and the alleged survivor, what does justice look like, but what does mercy look like? And then how do you prevent abuse within the church? What are the policies and procedures? So being a culture that is protective but also vigilant.
Protective and vigilant and letting the church lead in the hope and the healing. Good conversation, Justin Holcomb. And that's available on the Faith Radio Mornings web show page at myfaithradio.com. I encourage you to listen to that full interview. Justin Holcomb is wise insight and counsel and does offer some important words of hope. So check that out on myfaithradio.com and go to the Faith Radio Mornings show page. Well, coming up in a minute, we're going to hear from the Alliance Defending Freedom about the settlement of an important case. It was a 3-year court battle on behalf of former Atlanta Fire Chief Calvin Cochran. We'll hear from Chief Cochran as well coming up in just a moment here on Faith Radio Mornings.
When we speak of unfaithfulness in marriage, what is true personally is also true nationally. This is Jim Garlow. I've sat with many a couple who've just found out about the unfaithfulness of their spouse. And a broken covenant in marriage can be a treacherous journey to see if the marriage can be saved. Sometimes, gloriously, it can. And in the prophecy of Jeremiah to the nation Israel, despite their treacherous journey ahead, God had not given up on them. Instead, he promised a new covenant. In spite of Israel's disobedience and sin, God says in Jeremiah 31:31, "The time is coming when I will make a new covenant. I will put my law in their minds and write it in their hearts. I will be their God." This is the route by which national glory returns. Why? Because God's word said it would, and he hasn't given up on us. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Today on Faith Radio Mornings, we're honored to have with us former Atlanta Fire Chief Calvin Cochran, who served as a firefighter for some 30 years and just recently received from the city of Atlanta a $1.2 million settlement recognizing the chief had suffered unconstitutional harm based on a case that the Alliance Defending Freedom had presented for him. Also with us, David Cortman, who is the senior counsel and vice president of litigation for Alliance Defending Freedom. David, I want to start with you. Just the news out about Chief Cochran winning this settlement after a long fight. I'll maybe just have you do a quick recapitulation of what occurred and why the settlement. But I'm thinking that ADF, Alliance Defending Freedom, has had a couple of, it seems like, maybe successful cases lately. Are you feeling like maybe things have turned a little bit in favor of religious freedom?
You know, we have, God has been good. We have had a bunch of victories. We've had several at the Supreme Court recently, so that's always been good in the NIFLA, the pro-life case, and in Masterpiece Cake Shop, and a couple others. So, yeah, I mean, that's been pretty neat. I'm not sure we turned the corner, only because when people of faith ramp it up, so does the other side. So it's great to have these victories, but I think we all need to continue to be diligent and keep fighting.
Tell me, maybe just to introduce Chief Cochran for us and talk a little bit about this particular case, and then I would get Chief's reaction as well.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those incredible stories, I think, that's a little bit hard to believe that actually happens in our country, and that is you've got a guy like Chief Cochran who's a great man, a great leader, who's worked in the fire industry his entire life, over 34 years, reached the pinnacle of his career, was appointed by President Obama as the head fire administrator in the country, which is a top position, so things are going well. He's a man of God, so he's working with a group at his church, decides to write a book, a men's Bible study, basically talking about men overcoming condemnation, teaching them, according to biblical principles, how to be men of God, husbands of God, leaders, those types of things. And in that 162-page book, he talks on a page or two about sexual activity should be reserved between a man and a woman in a marriage. Some people get a hold of it from the city. They read the entire book, come back, get offended by that, and ends up where the chief gets fired solely because a few people were offended by what he talked about in his book. And so that was the impetus for the case.
Chief, congratulations on this settlement, although it was certainly hard fought. And tell me a bit about your reaction when you received news of this settlement over the firing.
Well, I was overjoyed, you know, because 4 years ago, I never thought it was possible in our country to be terminated for writing a book encouraging men to be the men that God has called them to be. And this four-year fiery trial really got a spark when the judge ruled that the policy the city used to terminate me was unconstitutional. And since that time, ADF had been working diligently, and thank God it came to a sound and good settlement.
Did you think at any point, maybe even before you contacted the folks at ADF, that, you know, maybe I just should let this go, sort of go quietly? I'm sure that's what the city was hoping you'd do.
That's what they were hoping that I would do, but that never crossed my mind. I knew that this was a pivotal point for me, but not only for me, for other government employees, and that if I just gave in to what they were trying to lead me to do, then government employees would be suffering the consequences of that. And I would be ashamed of myself for not standing on my faith. So I couldn't do that.
David, you know, the city of Atlanta agreeing to pay $1.2 million in a settlement, that's no small amount. Obviously, they realized that they maybe didn't have the case they were hoping for.
I think that's right. And I think the important thing is it, you know, hopefully this sends a message to other government entities around the country. You know, we see a lot of hostility these days against people of faith. We see local governments through these, you know, so-called human rights commissions and civil rights commissions going after Christians merely because they take a biblical view on marriage and other subjects. And so our hope here is not only that the city of Atlanta realized it, but that'll have repercussions and send a message across the country that that's not how you treat people of faith. And certainly if you do, there's a high price to pay.
Chief Cochran, were you actively engaged in your faith or talking about your faith even in your years as a firefighter? I think you had some 30 years or so. And had anything changed that would sort of have brought this on in the first place? I mean, obviously, just, you know, writing the book, and you did it in your own time, right?
Yes, sir. I mean, I was raised on faith and patriotism, you know, growing up in Shreveport, Louisiana, and living out my faith was just a way of life. So I was completely caught off guard and shocked that writing a book for Christian men had such adverse consequences today in the United States of America. But that's certainly the atmosphere that we're living in today.
And let me add something to that, because I think it's good, goes to your question. And that is, what's interesting is that the chief wasn't walking around work, you know, sharing his faith during work time. This is a book he wrote on his own time outside of work. He only gave it to people who either asked for it or were fellow Christians that he knew of. So someone had to take the book home, read it for several hours, find a page or two which said something he didn't like, go back to work, and then complain about him. So it's interesting the way this all came to be.
Is this a common approach or a strategy that's been used in the past, you know, or is this something kind of new? I mean, Alliance Defending Freedom has been around since, what, the early 90s. So is this unique in that respect in terms of a attack on someone's personal belief?
Well, it's not. It's just, you know, the left just changes the ways in which they do so. And so here, you know, you've got a guy who's at the top of his career. You have other businesses like the flower shop and the cake bakers and the photographers and the videographers and some of those folks, even locally where you are. People are just going after them because they don't like the stand that they're taking. They don't like them living in accordance to biblical values and biblical beliefs and don't want to hear otherwise. And if you do, well, then there's going to be some sort of punishment because they're going to go after you with the state's might behind them and trying to make sure that not only are you silenced, but that you get on board to whatever their lifestyle happens to be.
David Kortman is senior counsel and vice president of litigation for Alliance Defending Freedom. And on the line with us as well is former Atlanta Fire Chief Calvin Cochran, who received a settlement from the city of Atlanta as a result of this legal battle that we're talking about today. And we'll continue on with more of the conversation in just a moment. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings, and we've connected today with David Kortman, senior counsel and vice president of litigation for Alliance Defending Freedom. And they were the ones that were bringing the case of the former Atlanta fire chief, Calvin Cochran, to bear, and in December, a federal district court recognized that the city of Atlanta's actions were unconstitutional, and this past week, the city agreed to pay out a settlement, and that's good news, Chief Cochran. I mean, you maybe at the time didn't know that you were really, in a lot of ways, representing government employees at all levels and, you know, at all stages, so your leadership here has been pretty significant.
Yes, sir. You know, I did realize at the very front end that there was a lot at stake. Even have experienced that I'm not the only government employee that shares biblical views on marriage and sexuality. So the consequences of that was that other government employees that believed the same were afraid to share their conviction about that for fear that what happened to me could happen to them.
You spent your life in a field that's been about protecting others. This really, in some ways, is kind of a whole new firefight, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Well, you know, having experienced discrimination firsthand as one of the first African-American firefighters in the city of Shreveport, I made a vow that were I ever in a leadership position that I would certainly make sure that what happened to me would not happen to anyone else. And God put me in a position to establish that kind of a culture everywhere that I was able to serve. So I was shocked to be alleged and caused to blame for having discriminated against someone because of their beliefs.
David, it takes men and women of courage and to be able to, you know, face their convictions in spite of opposition. You know, I'm sure you're seeing this many times over in terms of some of the cases and the people that you're helping as they stand up for what they believe.
It really does, and that's why the true heroes in all of these battles are folks like the chief, folks like the Larsons and Baron L. Stutzman and Jack Phillips. I mean, these are the ones who said, look, you know, we've got to take a stand. This isn't right. And you mentioned earlier, sure, sometimes maybe it's easier just to go quietly into the night, but it's not the right thing to do. It's not the best thing to do. And that's why, you know, we at ADF just love what we do, because we get to stand with these folks. And, I mean, how else do you go against the city of Atlanta or other cities or other states? You know, people don't have the budget for that. They don't have the resources to do that. But when they do take a stand, it not only helps them, and as the chief will tell you, it's not about him, it helps everybody else who comes after them. And I think that's the neat thing here.
Well, yeah, we mentioned a couple of things. Bernal Stutzman, Jack Phillips, Masterpiece Cakes, although that has sort of that Supreme Court decision left a little bit open, right? Colorado's still being a bother, I think, to him, aren't they?
Well, they are. They're actually coming after him again. And that's what you were talking about before. Have we turned a corner? Every time you think you do, the other side ratchets it up. So even though the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Jack Phillips and said, look, the commission and the state here was hostile against his religious beliefs, they have the nerve now to come back after him with another setup call, someone who wanted basically a cake not only celebrating Satan, which they knew he would deny, but also one from supposedly transitioning from male to female, and knowing he would deny it, and yet the commission is still coming after him despite losing at the Supreme Court.
Well, speaking of maybe some upcoming cases or ongoing cases, I know in Minnesota, Carl and Angel Larson are video and film producers, and they have a case that you're dealing with as well. Just give us an update on that.
Yeah, I mean, what a great family this is. If you've ever met the Larsons, they're just cool people. Open their home to everybody. They're one of those with the giant kitchen table that's always full. Have a bunch of kids running around, just love people, love life. And what's interesting is they tell their story through videos and through films. So they're creative artists, both of them, and they create these very cool videos on different things. And they want to go in and tell people what great marriage is between a man and a woman, how it's God's gift to us to honor God in all they do. And basically the law there tells them that if they decide to tell through a story, through their film creations, that marriage should be between a man and a woman, they can either face giant fines or jail time if they will not create the same message supporting marriage between two men or two women.
Where do you see that? What's the process, or where is that going now? Is that something that will be before a court at some point?
It will. We actually filed the case last year. We were at the what's called the District Court of Appeals, the first level, and the court actually dismissed the case and said there's nothing to see here. So we've appealed that up to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is one court below the Supreme Court. We just had the hearing 2 days ago this week, and so we're hoping for a good turnout. But these are battles we've got to fight regardless. These are battles you'll see popping up all around the country. And what's interesting, these are not people who go out and are activists, quote unquote, or try to cause trouble. These are people just living out their faith as best they can, being kind, respectful, treating everybody the way they would want to be treated, and yet they're being sought after and have finally decided to say, look, we can't let this go on. We've got to take a stand. We should be able to live out our faith without punishment, and that's what all these folks are doing.
Appreciate the great work of Alliance Defending Freedom. I know it's something that it's the contributions, the support that comes from people all across the nation that really helped to strengthen you to be able to do what you do, right? This is all pro bono work.
Well, it is, and you talk about some of these cases, and we mentioned going to the Supreme Court. One of these cases, never mind all the ones we do across the country, but one of these cases is in the millions of dollars. And so it's one of those things, without people's support, we wouldn't be able to help the chief, we wouldn't be able to help the Larsons, but it is certainly a great pleasure and a joy to be able to do so, and we always thank folks who support us, because it's important work that needs to be done on behalf of everyone and not just our clients.
Chief Cochran, we're grateful for the settlement and that this important process is completed for you. Are you thinking it's more firefighting at some point, or are you just what's next for you? And is there a word of thanks that you'd give to? I'm sure you had many friends that were praying for and encouraging you. What would be your word to them?
Well, I think there's a possibility that opportunities in the fire service may open up since I've been vindicated. But the thank yous is, first of all, to folks like you, Neil, and your listeners who have been supporting and praying me this whole time. And I just thank Alliance Defending Freedom and their tremendous legal staff and team, and my precious wife and children. To God be the glory for everything that has happened.
Yeah, amen. Chief, good to visit with you. Congratulations again on this decision. David, thank you. You've had some significant cases. You've been in the middle of a lot. It hopefully doesn't get old for you.
No, it doesn't. I mean, when you work with people like the chief and the Larsons and all these folks, it is just it literally is a joy to get to do what we do. And it's God has been good in allowing us to stand next to them and to stand with folks like you who are willing to be at the forefront of all these issues.
David Kortman, senior counsel and the vice president of litigation for Alliance Defending Freedom, along with former Atlanta Fire Chief Calvin Cochran. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on today and for giving us this update and this encouragement to keep on standing strong for our convictions.
All right. Good to be with you.
Had the opportunity to hear Chief Cochran last year at a conference and really impressed with him. 30 years plus as a firefighter, and he was the chief of Atlanta and had this important settlement wrapping up a 3-year case. So great news on behalf of believers standing up for their convictions. I love what Billy Graham said. Courage is contagious. When a brave man takes a stand, the spines of others are often stiffened. Good word for us here on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll wrap up hour one in just a moment.
Stand up for Jesus, you soldiers of the cross. Lift high his royal banner, it must not suffer loss.
57 past the hour, hour one of Faith Radio Mornings for Friday. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. It's nice to have you along today. And there's another story out of Turkey today, another American missionary arrested. This is a day after Turkey released Pastor Andrew Brunson. Missionary David Bile was reportedly detained. Bile's been preaching in Turkey for nearly 20 years. He was arrested by the anti-terror police department over the weekend before being released the following day. He's been ordered to leave the country within the next 15 days. Goodness. Reminded to continue to pray for believers around the world as they share their faith, and even in the U.S., as we've just heard these past few minutes with that update from Alliance Defending Freedom, to be able to stand strong for our faith. And we want to equip you to be strong in your faith each and every day here on Faith Radio. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to meet Robert Woodson. Robert received an award, the Wilberforce Award 2018. We're going to find out about his important ministry in urban Washington, D.C. area. By the way, speaking of Wilberforce Award, Eric Metaxas has a commentary in on widows in China coming up today on Breakpoint. Want to listen for that. And our friend Adam Holtz returns to give us some good insight about upcoming movie options. It's Plugged In Reviews with Adam Holtz. That'll be along in about 5 minutes as we continue with Faith Radio Morning.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.